You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Ecclesiastes. In today's message, Pastor Sandy will teach through the book of Ecclesiastes, chapters 7 through 9.
The preacher is a man on a mission. He is trying to find the meaning in life, but he has limited his search to things, quote, under the sun. His boundaries are here below, what's earthly and what's material and what's physical. And he's experimented with science and with philosophy and with pleasure and with business and with fame and with religion and with wealth and with long life and with large family and with great power. And Ecclesiastes has concluded all is vanity. It's just all emptiness. Life is a wild goose chase without a goose. Life is like chasing after soap bubbles. Put all your effort into achieving your goals only to grab it and squeeze it and end up with nada. Life is a letdown. For a time, Solomon's life was a knot that refused to come untangled. It reminds me of the poster. A man standing there in his workout garb. He's exercising. He's staying in shape. And the caption at the bottom of the poster reads, "I'm doing what I can to prolong my life, hoping someday I'll learn what it's for." Eventually, Ecclesiastes does figure life out. Life takes on meaning as it relates to God. But before he draws that conclusion for us, he's going to hop us down a few more rabbit trails. Chapter 7 begins. A good name is better than precious ointment. Hear about the man who died in a shootout. His brother was a mobster, and he's actually shot doing his brother's bidding. This mobster was a violent criminal, and he approached the pastor of the local church, and he asked if he'd officiate at his brother's funeral. He said, "I just want you to say that my brother was a good man." Pastor said, "I can't do that. Everybody knows he was a lying scoundrel. I can't say he was a good man. I've got some integrity here. I would never tell a lie." Well, the mobster pulled out his checkbook and he wrote a $10,000 donation to the church building fund. The pastor thought again. He said, "Well, okay, I'll see what I can do." So he got up at the funeral and he turned to the congregation. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen," he said, "we all know the deceased was a dirty, low-down, rotten scoundrel. But compared to his brother right there, he was a good man." Hey, we all know it takes a lifetime to build a good reputation, but only a few short hours to tear one down. Solomon knew the value of a good reputation. Ecclesiastes said in Proverbs 22, verse 1, "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold." I've heard it put like this: every man has three names. The name his father gave him, the name other people call him, and the name he acquires himself. Well, what name have you acquired? When your name gets brought up in a conversation, what impression do the folks who are talking have? Well, a good name is better than a precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Solomon's saying if given the choice, most people would prefer to attend a birthday party than a funeral. As torturous as it might sound to you at first, if you've ever been to one of these, Chuck E. Cheese is still better than awake at Tom Wage's funeral home. Now, I know at the time you thought, "Man, I'd rather be died than to go to Chuck E. Cheese." But, you know, still, if given a choice, you know, you'd certainly rather go to a birthday party than a funeral home. And yet, Solomon says that funerals are more beneficial than birthday parties. For funerals remind us of the inevitability of death. Humans force us to think what we often try to avoid, and that is that one day we're all going to die. A funeral forces us to face death squarely, to consider, quote, the end of all men. He says in verse 3, "Sorrow is better than laughter, For by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. The person who laughs and parties his way through life is the fool. He never gets serious about life. Remember in Matthew 5, Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who mourn. Sorrow is a part of life. And sin and its effects should cause within us a certain sorrow and a certain mourning. Here's a great poem by Robert Browning Hamilton. He says, I walked a mile with pleasure. Oh, she chatted all the way, but left me none the wiser for all she had to say. I walked a mile with sorrow, and ne'er a word said she. But oh, the things I learned from her when sorrow walked with me. We often learn more from our sorrows than we do from our joys and from our mirth and from our happiness. C.S. Lewis once wrote, God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks to us in our conscience, but he shouts to us in our pain. Well, verse 5 says, it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Oh, a rebuke is often hard to stomach. But when it comes from a wise person, it's profitable, more so than just a silly song. He says, for like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. The laughter or the mocking of a fool is like the crackling of a campfire. It's loud, it's bright, but oh, it burns out quickly, doesn't it? Whereas the rebuke of wisdom lasts a lot longer than the mocking of fools. He says, surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. Bribes subvert justice. The love of money is the root of all evil. The end of a thing, he says, is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Notice this, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. You know, often the first steps of obedience are the most difficult. The renouncing of our sin, the dying to our selfishness, the releasing of a bad habit, the prying away of a temptation. You know, often the beginning of a thing is very hard. It gets easier as you go, but the beginning is very hard. It's often said the cross precedes the crown. The cross comes first, afterwards the crown. You remember when Jesus turned his water into wine? Remember the miracle there in Cana? It was said of the host that he had saved the best wine until last. At the time in rural Galilee, most of the wedding planners, they would serve the good stuff first. Then they brought out all the cheap wine for later. After everybody was a little tipsy, you know, then they'd lost their little finer taste. Their taste buds had gotten numb. Then they'd bring out all of the, you know, all of the cheap stuff, and nobody could tell the difference. You know, this is the way it is with this world's pleasures. I hope you know that. The more we taste, the more we try to enjoy, or the more we try to experience, the more bored with it we become. Oh, in the beginning, it's thrilling, but how quickly it loses its thrill. It loses those chills. But with God's blessings, it's just the opposite. He says the end of a thing is better than its beginning. The longer you stick with the Lord, the better it gets. Verse 9, do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Boy, a quick temper is bound to get you into a lot of trouble, isn't it? Verse 10, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. This is a great verse. Solomon, in essence, is saying, stop always talking about the good old days. You know, they were never quite as good as you remembered. Oh, for the days when we didn't have to worry about high gas prices and car repairs and new tires. And boy, if we could just go back, if we could just forget about cars and just go back to when we had to wake up 4 o'clock every morning and feed the horses. Or when we had to walk everywhere we went. Oh, wait a minute. Not so bad after all, is it? It's been said usually the good old days are a combination of a bad memory and a good imagination. Rather than long for the good old days, we need to make the most of today. This is what Solomon is telling us. Verse 11, wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? Here's the key to serving God. It's not to try to bend his will in your direction. You can't make straight what God has determined to be crooked. Don't fight with God. Serving God is finding what God is up to and then getting involved in what he's doing, not trying to bend his will to us. It says, verse 14, in the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. Do you remember what Job said to his wife in Job chapter 2? He said, shall we indeed accept good from God and shall we not accept adversity? It's a good question that we all should ask ourselves. We love his blessings. But what about his buffetings? What about his burdens? Do we readily accept them as well? Solomon is saying here that God gives us blessing to keep us happy and burdens to keep us humble. God gives us both. Prosperity and adversity has purposes for both. Paul wrote to the Philippians, I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know, when I read that verse, I think of the football team that's about to go out and kill the other team. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, can you lose graciously? That's what Paul's saying. He says we can win triumphantly and humbly. We can lose graciously and with the right attitude. We can accept adversity. We can accept prosperity. We can do all things through Christ. That's the proper understanding of that verse. Paul sees God's purpose in both prosperity and adversity, and the strength that God promises us is to deal with them both. Through Christ, I can handle whatever life might dish out. Verse 15, I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. In other words, life isn't always fair. Good people sometimes suffer. Bad people sometimes get away with their crimes. So, he says, concludes, do not be overly righteous, nor be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Do not be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you grasp this and also not remove your hand from the other, for he who fears God will escape them all. Now, what in the world is Solomon telling us? Make sure you don't misunderstand Solomon. He's not telling us to just settle for a life of compromise. Hey, become a good fence straddler. That's what you need to be. That's not what he's saying. He's not telling us don't be a goody two-shoes. But don't be a hellion. You know, just try to find some middle ground there. You know, just be a decent guy who parties on the weekends. Okay, just do that. That's not what he's saying. Solomon is not advocating some kind of half-hearted commitment to God. Now, the preacher has already pointed to death as the proof of our futility and our fallibility. You know, the fact is that we're all sinners. We're all sinful human beings, and we will all be sinful human beings until we're redeemed, until we receive new bodies, until we enter into the gates of glory, into heaven itself. Thus, in our attempts to be good in this life, we are never going to overcome our flawed humanity. None of us are ever going to be perfect. And so don't expect perfection from yourself. If you do, what's going to happen? You're destined for disillusionment. How many people have expected too much out of themselves, and as a result, they've thrown in the towel. They've just sort of quit. They've given up on God. The problem, though, is they were trying to be overly righteous. They were trying to have some kind of sinless, spotless perfection, which is impossible for any of us. That's what he's saying. Do not be overly righteous. But on the other side, do not be overly wicked. Don't take the opposite approach and just sort of concede defeat in your battle against sin. Well, I'm a sinner. I just can't help it when I sin, so I might as well just go out and sin to the hilt. That's foolishness. Where's the fear of God in that? No, God has promised us the ability, the supernatural ability to walk in victory. He has. Not sinless perfection per se, but certainly a measure of victory in our lives. So here's the balance Solomon is saying we need to grasp for ourselves. Don't give in to failure. But when you do fail, don't let failure bury you. That's the balance. We're all humans in need of God's grace. We can never forget that. Don't give in to failure, but when you do fail, don't let it bury you. This is a father's job in the life of his kids. Son, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Then when he doesn't, it's okay, son. There'll be other days. You know, you'll bat again. Don't worry about that strikeout. You know, that's the fatherly instinct God is sharing with us here. There's a great balance here that we need to reach in our lives. You know, we all are going to fail at times, but don't let that failure bury you and stifle you. I think this says it best. Christians aren't sinless, but they will sin less and less as they grow. That's the balance. Well, he says in verse 19, wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city, for there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Once again, he said, there are no perfect people. Also, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. This is great advice here. You know, you can't shut people's mouths, but you can shut your own ears. Disgruntled employees make all kinds of statements about their boss. Have you noticed this? Which may or may not be true. An employee gets denied vacation. Oh, he's such a terrible, terrible boss. Whereas 9 out of 10 people probably would have made the same decision as the boss. But when you hear the employee grumble and complain, you'd think that the boss was a merciless tyrant. I mean, Pastor James wants vacation. I tell him, James, you can't take vacation every other week. But then he goes off and talks to you and you hear him complaining and grumbling. Think that mean Pastor Sandy. Whereas if you were in the same situation, you'd agree with me. Be careful. Consider the source and don't draw conclusions without all the facts. He says, do not take to heart everything people say. That's good advice. Verse 22, for many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. You know, we've all been on both ends of that stick, haven't we? Where things that were not true were said of us, but then there's been times when we've said things of other people that weren't true as well. We should take heed to Solomon's warnings, since we all know how easy it is to jump to the wrong conclusions. He says, all this I have proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. You know, here's another trail that turned up a dead end for Solomon. He knows the value of wisdom, but he's not always been wise. He was the wisest man who ever lived, but he acted foolishly at times, and this frustrated him. He says, as for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? In other words, wisdom was elusive even for me. Like everything else he had tried, he realized that wisdom wasn't the ultimate answer. He said, I applied my heart to know, to search and seek out wisdom and the reason of things, to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. You recall Solomon's story. You remember God came to him and granted him one request. Here it is, Solomon. You got a blank check. Just fill it in. Whatever you choose, it'll be granted. And you remember the king's choice. It was a wise choice. He chose not riches, not power, not long life, but he wanted wisdom to rule justly and righteously. But here's what derailed the good outcome that wisdom promises. Verse 26, he says, "And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her." Oh my. Feminine charms have often nullified a man's wisdom. Well, Solomon is saying that women can trump wisdom. That's what he's saying. The allure of a woman can turn the wisest man into a blubbering idiot. Have you noticed this? This is what happened to Solomon, was it not? He started out so well, but his expanding harem overwhelmed his wisdom and led him away from God and down a road of vain pursuits. The lust for women can trump wisdom. It gets into a man's head, begins to make bad decisions, strange decisions, weird decisions. Guy was going great until he met that girl. Oh my, that's why it's so important who you marry. That you marry a woman who keeps you on the right track. Because once you fall in love like that, she can take you down whatever road she wants to take you, man. She can just steer you. She can play you. She can manipulate you. She's got you tied to her little finger. You're on a string from then on out. So make sure you're careful as to whose string you get tied to, okay? Verse 27. "Here is what I have found," says the preacher, "adding one thing to the other to find out the reason which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found." Wow. Solomon's experiences had soured his attitude toward women, had they not? You know, he says, I've looked and I can find one wise man among a thousand, but I've never been able to find a wise woman. That's what he's saying. Now, this is not necessarily God's opinion, understand. But this was certainly Solomon's opinion. In fact, listen to these verses in the Living Bible. They come out interesting. It says, "This is my conclusion," says the preacher. "Step by step, I came to this result after researching in every direction. 0.1% of the men I interviewed could be said to be wise, but not one woman." Let this be a lesson to the single women. Think this through with me, ladies. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. What was a concubine? It was a sexifier. Kind of like a pacifier, but just a sexifier. That's what a concubine was. Kind of a stripper girlfriend. That's what a concubine was. Understand this. There were 1,000 women at Solomon's disposal every single day of his life, every single evening of his life. And since he is king, none of these girls are going to say no to him, which proves this. You can give a man all the free sex he can handle, and it will not increase his respect for women. Think that through. This man has such a low view of women. He says, "I can't find any wise woman." Evidently, all of his free sex, evidently, all of the women at his disposal didn't increase his view of women. As a matter of fact, it decreased his view of them. It devalued them in his mind. You see, just the opposite is true. When men use women for sex, they don't respect them.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.